Hello, this is Sean Kennedy. I'm the editor-in-chief of the American Journal of Nursing, and I'm very pleased today to be speaking with Patricia Pittman, or Polly Pittman. She is an associate professor in the Department of Health Policy at George Washington University School of Public Health and Health Services. And together with colleagues Catherine Davis, Frank Schaefer, Carolina Nicole Herrera, and Kojo Bennett, she is the lead author on a research paper, Perceptions of Employment-Based Discrimination Among Newly Arrived Foreign Educated Nurses, that is appearing in our January 2014 issue. So welcome, Polly.
Thank you, John.
It's so nice to talk with you again. The last time we spoke was after publication of your paper in 2010, which looked at ethical recruitment of foreign education nurses. So this seems kind of a natural progression now looking at some of the ethical employment issues. But talk about why this now. While it is a natural progression, what made you, jump on this topic now?
Well, I think these are individuals who've remained in our country, of course, and have had, in some cases, difficult experiences during the integration. And I think, to some extent, it's telling their story. It's an untold story. And from a policy perspective, it's particularly important because we're likely to, again, recruit international nurses when we have new nursing shortages. Nobody knows exactly when that might happen. But we have seen over the course of the last 30 years that certainly we recruit international nurses when we have cyclical shortages of nursing and nurses in this country. So it's a phenomenon that's unlikely to go away. There's an ebb and flow, but each time we have a new wave of recruitment, it seems to be bigger. Mm-hmm. And if you combine that sort of natural ebb and flow, if you will, with the prospect of immigration reform in this country, we will have an additional layer of international nurses coming in just because the pipeline has been sort of backlogged for so many years. So there are thousands and thousands of nurses that have essentially signed contracts with recruiters to come over and have been waiting for from 7 to 10 years, mostly in India and the Philippines. Mm-hmm. And if we have immigration reform, those nurses will technically be able to come immediately, regardless of whether we have a nursing shortage here or not. And so I think it's important as we anticipate the next wave that we learn the lessons from the past.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So what did you find? These are the nurses that you surveyed about their recruitment to the U.S., correct?
That's right. So these are nurses that entered the United States between 2003 and 2007. We used CGFNS data on visa screens, which is a document that nurses have to obtain before they're able to get their visa. And we excluded from the sample nurses who had not yet arrived in the United States. So these are the nurses that were successful in arriving in the United States.
Okay. So you did the survey about their employment, what they saw as what their perceptions were about the fairness of their employment?
That's right. So it does bleed into the recruitment model somewhat, mm-hmm. because the terms of their contracts are often determined by what kind of recruitment model they use. But we were looking largely at what happens to people once they're here. Mm-hmm. So there's a period often of 2 or 3 years during which internationally recruited nurses are still under the contract that they agreed to when they were in the sending countries. And in particular, when they're in countries like the Philippines or India, where there's a huge wage differential between their home country and this country, it is to be expected that nurses are more likely to sign contracts that an American might deem to be unfair than, for example, a Canadian who has less of a wage differential and might be mm-hmm. a little less desperate to come to a country that pays better and therefore would be more cautious in terms of the kinds of arrangements they enter into. Mm-hmm. And so these contracts are largely dictating the terms of their working conditions, although the employer bears some responsibility as well, of course, because the employer is, in many instances, the one using the staffing agency or the placement agency. This is part two of what happens to people once they arrive in the United States.
Mm-hmm. And as you found with the recruitment study, this one also, you mentioned the model, there was differences between staffing agencies versus the more self-directed nurses.
Exactly. So you can think about four sort of large categories, and of course there are some blurred lines because different companies contract in different ways with each other. But in general, nurses from abroad can get work here either directly through the Internet or through social networks without using any intermediaries, and we call that the direct recruitment or the direct self-directed, model. The second way is that a large employer can hire an agent in a sending country and identify candidates and hire directly. Many of the large academic health centers, for example, do that. They're big enough, they're recruiting enough people that they don't need an intermediary.
Mm-hmm.
A third way is to use an intermediary, often called a placement agency, which charges the employer per person that they place. And then the last is the staffing agency. And the staffing agency model is complex. It's they're all different size companies. Some of them have an international side and also have a domestic per diem or travel nurse side. Some of them are standalone companies. Most treat the international nurses differently under a different sort of business model than they treat the domestic travel nurses.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So we've often in the past in the literature assumed those to be one and the same, and they're actually quite different animals, even if they're owned by the same company. They tend to be subsidiaries and have a different business model. So those are the four models.
Mm-hmm. And but there were clear differences in terms of how nurses perceived they were being treated.
Yes. So what we did is we tried to look at four what we called outcomes of interest. And those four outcomes were the reported hourly wage, so how much were you paid at the time that you came to the United States. That was the only sort of absolute outcome, if you will. The mm-hmm. others were much more subjective. So the, mm-hmm. the three others were perceived discrimination, and within that category we were interested in whether they perceived that the wage was lower than their American counterparts doing the same job, whether they perceived that they had worse or better benefits, and whether they perceived that they were assigned less desirable shifts. The third outcome was perceived orientation, the adequacy of the orientation, and again, the sub-items were perceived clinical orientation to the needs and of the culture of patients, and general orientation to the United States. And then the fourth outcome was satisfaction. So what we did is we did descriptive analysis and regression analyses to understand what variables were associated with better and worse outcomes on each of these four domains. And there were two variables that turned out to be quite important. And from a policy perspective, they are especially important. So the first variable that was radically different was the country of education. So if you're coming from Canada or another developed country, your likelihood of reporting perceived discrimination was much lower. And in fact, the actual hourly wages that you reported were much higher. If you were coming from a low-income country, it was much higher. In other words, you were more likely to perceive discrimination. So perhaps that's no surprise,
mm-hmm.
But it's important from a policy perspective because it shows that companies deal with people based on the country of education differently, which is, from a legal perspective, we don't allow that in our country, and yet evidently it does occur.
Mm-hmm.
The other variable of interest was the recruitment model, and what we found is that those nurses who were self-directed had the best outcomes, followed by those who were directly hired by their employers, and those who had the most perceived difficulty were those hired by staffing agencies by a large, very large margin.
Hmm. And that's kind of consistent with when talking about the initial recruitment was the staffing agencies were sort of perceived as the most unethical.
Yes, that's right. I would say the differences once they were in the United States were even larger.
Mm-hmm. And I guess you haven't gotten there yet in the sense of once their contracts were up, what happens to these nurses? Do they have you pursued that as part of the research? Or
no, we haven't in our research, but we do know from the National Sample Survey of RNs, the 2008 National Sample Survey of RNs, which unfortunately is the last sample survey that we will have coming out of the U.S. government because they've now canceled that survey series. But what we know from that survey is that wages, if you compare wages of foreign-educated nurses to U.S.-educated nurses, overall, U.S.-educated nurses are paid less. But what happens is that it occurs, basically, if you look at the six-year mark, that's when the foreign-educated nurses start being paid more. Mm-hmm. And so the research that has been done in this area suggests that one explanation for that is that foreign-educated nurses tend to be more highly educated, and they tend to work more hours. So no surprise there. Mm. So I think the real surprise is, why is it that when they come in, they're not paid, at least on par with their American counterparts?
Because of the education.
Given that they have higher education. And one possible explanation is that the contracts that they signed while they're still in the sending countries are, in a sense, artificially holding their wages down.
Mm. I was wondering if the culture, if there's a, but I guess it doesn't make sense if it was the staffing agency that's doing it as opposed to a direct hospital doing the hiring, in the sense thinking that they have to, while they may be more educated, there's more of an investment and learning curve as they arrive and begin to work in terms of
Sure. Language
and system and culture. So therefore, it's like when they used to hire a graduate nurse and then the salary got bumped up when they passed the board.
Mm-hmm. Right, as they get more experience, mm-hmm. and that would make sense. But, of course, we're comparing mm-hmm. among subgroups of foreign-educated nurses, so they all
Right. Presumably
need to have this period of orientation where they might be paid less. But mm-hmm. when you see these large differences in the recruitment model, as well as in the country of education, it does raise some questions about what's happening.
Mm-hmm. And I imagine you've heard some very striking stories from some of the nurses, not particularly involved in the study, but as you've gone about the work in looking at this issue.
Yes, I have. And you know, I think one of the things that I'm hearing sort of among the international nursing community is that increasingly staffing agencies are sort of the only game in town, because there is no longer a sort of overall nursing shortage in the United States. Many employers are backing out of their original offers. And so those nurses are being what they call recaptured by staffing agencies that are mm-hmm. always interested in having additional nurses on staff that they can send to places where there may be pockets of shortages.
Mm-hmm.
So whereas we saw a smaller proportion of the overall volume of international nurses being employed by staffing agencies back during the shortage of 2000 to 2008, during this abatement of the shortage, it sort of exacerbates the relative role of staffing agencies versus the other kinds of models.
Mm-hmm.
And there's concern among the international nurses about that, but I would say there's resignation because they essentially know that there's a period of commitment to the company and then they will move on.
So they'll just have to deal with it until they're out of their contract, basically.
Exactly,
yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, obviously there's some staffing agencies that are great employers, and we're talking here mm-hmm. sort of at a statistical level, not about individual companies.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
there's enormous variation in among the companies, no doubt. And we work with a couple of staffing agencies on a project around ethical international recruitment, and I'm confident that their practices are different.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't negate the fact that overall, when you look from a research perspective at what's happening there, there's some troubling signs.
Sure.
But again, this is the period 2000 to 2008. You know, it is possible that those practices have improved. It's also possible that those practices have gotten worse. We really do need to do a follow-up and see what's happening with them.
Yeah, yeah. Was anything a surprise to you?
In terms of the research findings?
Yeah, in terms of findings.
Well, I was... you know, overall, I was surprised that as many Canadians in our sample as we had were reporting problems too. I had sort of assumed that Canadians would have no problems. I assumed, you know, perhaps individuals from India and Philippines were more likely to have problems, in part because of accent, perhaps some issues around race and ethnicity. And there are a fair number of Canadians that are also unhappy in their situations when they arrived, and I was somewhat surprised by that. Mm. I think that the overall findings, basically that, for example, at least 68% of the sample perceived discrimination in one of the three sub-areas was much higher than I thought we would encounter. I think that's an alarming number. It's particularly alarming because we had such large numbers of Canadians in our sample. If you compare our sample country distribution to the National Sample Survey of RNs, we had a higher proportion of RNs from Canada. Therefore, if there is a response bias here, it would be essentially suggesting that the real level of perceived discrimination may actually be higher.
Right, since you found that the Canadians were actually fared better than the other nurses from underdeveloped countries. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Wow. Yeah. So what's the message for our readers and for nurse managers as they're, right now, of course, there's indications that there's even some layoffs happening with the economy and hospitals not wanting to hire because of, all this trepidation about reimbursements that are still evolving and payment penalties with CMS and healthcare reform, but anticipating the shortage when many nurses retire in the next few years, what should managers be thinking about now?
Well, I think, there's the overall message has to do with good retention policies, and good retention policies matter to the bottom line. We know that from research on U.S. nurses. Turnover is very costly, and if you're going to the expense of recruiting internationally, why would you not try to, from the get-go, create a situation in which your candidates are feeling treated fairly? I mean, it makes good financial sense. So that's one very simple message. And I think sort of at a more detailed level, for those hospitals and health systems that are using staffing agencies, I think it's important for them to understand that staffing agencies that specialize in international nurses may have obtained signatures on contracts that made sense to those nurses when they were in their sending countries, but when they come here may not compare favorably to the way other people are treated. And I think anticipating that difference as they decide how they're going to bring in international nurses is important. I mean, I think large systems should, when possible, recruit directly, frankly. It's much more advantageous to the nurses that are coming in, and I think to those hospitals' bottom lines. I mean, we know now that there is some international recruiting happening in pockets of the country. It's starting to come back, and I think the challenge for the nurse managers in those sites is to figure out ways to ensure that the internationally recruited nurses feel treated fairly, that they're orientation is adequate. I think you can't just assume that people are going to integrate sort of automatically. Some additional effort is needed to accommodate for the recruitment of international nurses in order for it to be a successful experience.
For everybody,
yes.
Well, thank you very much for taking the time, Polly, and giving us some more context on the study. I hope those listening will go to the January issue, either in print or online or on the iPad, and read the study. And please let us know what you think. You can email two letters to the editor or me directly, and we'll make sure Polly sees them. So thank you again, Polly.
Thank you, Sean.